This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed. Thanks for joining me this Wednesday. We'll begin this week with the adventures of Philip Marlowe. We'll hear his episode from January 8th, 1949, titled The Restless Day. After that, it's Richard Diamond, private detective, in the Renee Bennett protection case. That story aired October 22nd, 1949.
They all knew he was aboard the yacht when it exploded and sank, and everybody called his death an accident. That is, everybody except the corpse himself. He said it was murder.
From the pen of Raymond Chandler, outstanding author of crime fiction, comes his most famous character as CBS presents The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. And now, with Gerald Moore, starred as Philip Marlowe, we bring you tonight's exciting story, The Restless Day.
It had been a long, hard Saturday night that topped off a long, rugged week. When I finally got to bed dog-tired at 5 a.m. Sunday morning, I was planning to stay there until I'd caught up on all the sleep I'd lost and gained a running head start on the coming week. And by 3 in the afternoon on the day of rest, I figured that job was only about half done. But whoever it was that started riding my doorbell had a different idea. I held out until the buzzer stopped, but it was only a change of tactics, so I gave up. All right, I know when I'm licked. Just a minute.
Thank heaven you're in, Mr. Marlowe.
Hmm?
I don't know what I'd have done otherwise. Sorry.
Sorry.
Here, read this. This story on the front page.
What?
No, down here.
Oh, yacht explosion death label accident, huh?
Yes, yes.
Mystery blast which destroyed the Rollins yacht at Santa Monica Friday night, and in which Benjamin Rollins, noted cosmetics manufacturer, was killed, was established today by police investigators as accidental.
Sorry, I spoke too much.
That's all right. The explosion which shattered and sank the 50-foot pleasure boat was caused by a leaking fuel line. Rollins, known to be a chain smoker, is believed by witnesses to have continued on page 7.
Never mind, Marlowe. I'll tell the rest.
Yeah, think you'll make it?
There are two frightening things wrong with that story.
Well, go ahead. Frighten me.
First, the explosion was no accident. That fuel line was repaired a week ago. Second, Ben Rollins was not killed.
You're shaking my faith in the American press. How do you know all this?
Because I am Benjamin Rollins.
Yes, well, look, fella, you better dial 116 on the phone and tell the police all about it,
huh? No, that's exactly what I can't do. Someone's tried to murder me. If they find out I'm still alive, I'll be a target for a second attempt.
Wait a minute. I need two things right now. One, a cup of coffee. Would you like some?
No, milk, if you please. My doctor insists.
Okay, come on. The other's a good, solid explanation of why everybody thinks you were aboard that yacht.
Well, first, they believe my body was lost in the explosion. You see, I intended to spend the night there because Lucille, my wife, and I quarreled.
Mm-hmm.
But I got a call, and I had to go out of town on business at the last minute. I went out to the boat, but only to pick up some papers. I was in a hurry. I must have left the lights on. I lost my hat in the wind on the way back. It was found in the water. Apparently, I didn't secure the dinghy because that was adrift offshore. Mind you, I read all this in the paper when I got back this morning.
Back from where?
Phoenix. Arizona.
Figures.
I came in on the California Limited. You can check on that. Marlowe, I must know who tried to kill me before they know they've failed.
Uh-huh. That could be tough. Have you got any ideas?
Yes, I have. It might be any one of three people.
Three?
For instance, Walter Pittman, my ex-partner, threatened to kill me less than a month ago in New York when I won another court decision from him.
Mm-hmm.
Then there's my business manager, a fellow named Slater. I almost fired him last week, the arrogant fool. It's always when I get cross this comes.
Yeah, I see. So.
And I'm sorry to say it, but Mrs. Rollins would no doubt rather have me dead than alive. That's quite a lineup for a mere cosmetics chemist, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Look, you haven't been running lipstick experiments with somebody else's live equipment, have you, Rollins?
Mm-hmm. Oh, certainly not. I've been working so hard I haven't time for my wife. To say nothing of another woman. Oh, Marlowe, I'm frightened. I must get to the bottom of this. I'll pay you double your usual fee. Will you help me?
Okay, Rollins, it's a deal. If I hurry, I might get in on your funeral. Under the circumstances, that should make somebody due for a very big surprise.
The sh-
shave and a shower later, and I checked my wheezing client's credentials, settled him down in my apartment with orders to answer the phone, but not the door, and drove out to Santa Monica, where the not-very-late Ben Rawlins had made his home. I had a list of names, addresses, and phone numbers of people close to Rawlins. That is, close enough to kill. I decided that Arthur Slater, the business manager, was my best bet for an opener. He had been described as soft-spoken, efficient, and somewhat arrogant. And after I found his cottage on Seaview Drive and walked up to the door, I heard someone inside offering a similar description, but with more color.
That's a mighty routine, Arthur Slater. If you think for 2 minutes you could throw little Angie over any time you feel like it after all the promises you've made, you're wrong.
That's just about enough, Angie.
Not by half, brother. I know which way the wind is blowing, and it's a nice big wind. Nobody kicks me out, and I mean nobody. So think it over, Mr. Big. Oh, get out of my way.
Yes, ma'am. Cute kid. Friend of yours, Slater?
Who are you? Another insurance investigator?
That's right. My name's Marlowe. May I come in?
Yes, certainly. All the others did.
Thanks. Who knows? I may be the last. Slater, I've got 3 reasons for believing that yacht explosion was no accident.
Not an accident? What reasons are you talking about?
For one, Walter Pittman.
Pittman? You mean Rawlins' ex-partner?
You know him, huh?
Well, only by name. I never met the man.
All right, then. Let's talk about reason number two, Lucille Rawlins. How do you feel about her, Slater?
Well, you must be out of your mind, Marlowe. She and Ben fought constantly, yes.
Slater, I asked how you felt about Mrs. Rawlins.
I don't like her. And now, what or who is reason number three?
You are. You had an argument with Rawlins last week. He practically fired you.
And you think I'd kill him over that?
Could be.
Look, Marlowe, Ben Rawlins drove himself like an overloaded truck. He had a cigarette cough, nervous shakes, and bad dreams. To me, bureau drawer eyelashes and glue-on fingernails simply aren't that important. So we had frequent arguments. Now, do you have any more smart reasons you'd like to discuss, or would you care to leave?
Just one thing more. Why does your girlfriend think you're a little stuck up these days?
You're becoming a bit too personal, Marlowe. Get out. I'm not compelled to answer any of your questions. There's an established legal procedure.
Skip it, Slater. If I need to, I'll be back. And I'm fairly chummy with the boys in blue myself, so I'll get the answers if I want them. Good night, Big Shot. Arthur Slater was like a billiard ball, hard to rub the wrong way. And if he did have an angle, he was playing cagey. So as long as I was in the neighborhood and the trail was hot, I figured I'd have a talk with the Spitfire, Angie. It wasn't hard to trail her. A corner newsboy had heard her get into a cab. The cabbie swore he'd never forget her. Swore again. So finding her apartment was less trouble than unfolding a $5 bill. When I pulled up across the street from her place, I noticed a big car, as big as the average garage and older than last year's college graduate, parked in front. It was a black Pierce Arrow, and someone with a mouthful of cigar hulked behind the wheel. The cigar was pointed at me as I crossed the street. When I went up the stairs to Angie's door, it was still pointed at me. But I forgot about that when the apartment door opened. Angie was relaxed. There were little glints of gold in her green eyes. And the warm lights behind her shimmered on soft waves of hair, a shade of burnished copper. Maybe she was a Spitfire, but at the moment, her damper was down.
Yeah. Well, Buster, you got your mouth open. You might as well say something.
Angie, who do you think murdered Ben Rawlins?
Oh, murdered? My mistake, chum. Good night.
Just a minute. This is business, honey.
Who are you, anyhow?
Philip Marlowe. You ran over me on your way out of Slater's place a few minutes ago and dented my ego.
Well, sue me. Who are you working for, Shaman?
You wouldn't believe me if I told you. But I will tell you this, sweetheart. The explosion on that yacht was no accident. So I'm checking up on wives that'd rather be widows.
Lucille Rawlins?
Mm-hmm.
Nuts. She was rolling in dough either way. She hated her job, but she sure didn't have to kill to quit. Get your compass fixed, Marlowe.
Wrong way, huh? Well, suppose Lucille were in love with Pittman, maybe.
Pittman? Who's he?
Shot in the dark. Tell me something, Angie. Your boyfriend Slater has picked up a lot of push lately. How come?
Oh, some big deal they've been working on at the plant. And he makes me sick. It's the first sniff of a success, and suddenly all his hats are too small.
Especially his old hats, honey. And you can't blame the guy if he's really on his way up now, can you?
Listen, Mac, I'll tell you, him, and the whole world something. Nobody is going to put little Angie on the skids. If there's a heave-ho pulled around here, Mr. Hotshot Slater himself will get it, and right in the neck. So if you happen to be snooping for him, Marlowe, you can putter right back and tell him so. Now beat it!
That's not a bad idea. Oh, by the way, what's Angie stand for?
Angelica. But don't count on it, brother. Don't count.
As I went down the front steps, the cigar and the black Pierce Arrow lined up on me again and followed me as I crossed the street and got into my car. It was still pointing at me as I drove away, but after all, the street was public property and the guy could smoke a cigar if he wanted to. Well, by the time I knocked on the front door of the Rawlins home, I was braced for a deluge of tears and a session of red-eyed hysteria. So I was caught off balance by the handsome blonde woman of 35 with a wry, crisp waistline who was cool, calm, and well-collected in green slacks. She introduced herself as Lucille Rawlins.
Sit down, Mr. Marlowe. You said you're a friend of Ben's?
That's right, Mrs. Rawlins. I stopped by to offer my condolences. But apparently condolences aren't much in order today. No tears, huh? Not even crocodile tears.
I'm not a hypocrite, Mr. Marlowe, that's why. I'm merely stunned and confused over this terrible accident, and I'm not sure yet how I feel.
Yeah, it was an accident, all right. Especially since that leaky fuel line that caused it was repaired a week ago.
It had been repaired?
Oh, yeah. It's interesting, isn't it?
Who are you, Marlowe?
I'm a private detective, and I know a lot more than that. I know, for instance, that the insurance on the boat alone will keep you and pretty doodads for several years. And that's only a drop in a bucket.
Mr. Marlowe, I think you'd better leave.
And I think you better climb down off that high horse and listen. Because I haven't even started yet. Ben was a hated man by Pittman, by Slater, and maybe by you. And I can prove he didn't die accidentally, baby, so I'd like some nice straight answers, huh? When did you see Pittman last?
I've never seen Walter Pittman. I don't even know what he looks like. Ben and I were married 2 years ago. He broke with Pittman long before that.
But you're pretty chummy with Arthur Slater.
That's a lie. Why, we hardly spoke until a week ago.
You picked a poor time to get friendly, baby.
Listen here, Marlowe. Mr. Slater, I ran into each other purely by accident one afternoon last week. I happened to stop in at a small bar in downtown Los Angeles. Mr. Slater was there at a table talking with some man, a stranger to me. When he saw me, he came over. He seemed upset. So upset.
Wait a minute. Is there anyone else here now?
Well, no. My maid went out to the movies.
I heard something, a noise. It sounded like it came from the service boys. Come on, let's have a look.
Well, I don't know what any...
Hey!
The lights went off.
Somebody turned them off. You better... Lucille, look out! Bullets which had been intended for Lucille had only traveled the width of the kitchen, but miraculously both had missed. Whoever had thrown them moved out fast, because when I got through the service porch and into the backyard, nothing stirred except the restless ends of a pepper tree. But a second later, a heavy, clanking motor roared on the side street, and I got to the fence just in time to see a boxcar on rubber tires skid around the corner. It was a black Pierce Arrow. Back to the house, found the master switch, and turned on the lights. Lucille, her face strained and bloodless, stood in the kitchen door and watched me. A hole had been punched in the back screen door, and on the floor was a strange object which had been used to unhook the lock. It looked like an oversized bobby pin wearing rubber pants, which didn't mean a thing to me. But to Lucille, who stared at it like it was a centipede she just found in a cream puff, it meant plenty.
Ben.
What?
It's like Ben himself was here. Like he wasn't killed at all.
What are you talking about? What is this thing, anyway?
I don't know. Part of some new invention he was working on. For the last month, Ben carried two or three of these things with him everywhere.
Look, Lucille, where's your phone?
Right there.
Oh.
But, Marlowe, you don't suppose... Who are you going to call?
Friend of mine. He'd better be in, too.
Go. Marlowe. What's the matter, Marlowe? Busy?
Yeah, busy. He's either talking to someone or he's gone out after leaving the phone off the hook. Either way, Lucy, that makes my friend very busy.
In just a moment, we will return to the second act of The Adventures of Philip Marlowe. But first, it may have taken a little detective work finding a much-wanted man last week, but an unprecedented number of listeners seem to have turned Philip Marlowe, for Jack Benny's largest audience this season found him here on his opening show on CBS. Tomorrow night, Jack will be back with Mary, Dennis, Phil, Rochester, and Don for more of the fun that's made the Jack Benny Show the number one comedy in radio. You'll find him right here on CBS every Sunday at 7 Eastern Standard Time. And now, with our star, Gerald Moore, we return to the second act of Philip Marlowe and tonight's story, The Restless Day.
left Lucille Rawlins, the feminine target for tonight. I headed for Angie Gordon's, where I'd first seen the man with a cigar in his face, who I suddenly figured might be Walter Pittman. And as I drove, I felt like my brains had spent the night playing leapfrog in a squirrel cage. Because any way I'd call the dice, every one of my clients suspected of murdering him to somebody else. And just to keep things from making any sense at all, I suspected my client. I pulled up near Angie's and saw the Pierce Arrow parked, lights and a man with cigar out. When I got close to the bungalow door, I knew that the lady was at home.
Now, look here,
and that she was receiving a gentleman caller, more or less.
Tell me your name is Smith, which incidentally I don't believe. And then you start asking a lot of very personal questions. How cozy.
Now, please, you do not understand. There are certain things about the death of Ben Hollins that I must know. Things that mean a lot to me.
How much a lot?
Well, $100, maybe.
What? Now, don't tell me that's all you could stuff into that briefcase there in your hand.
Listen, girl, I must know whether that explosion on the boat was an accident or not.
The police let it go as an accident?
Never mind that. You are Slater's girl. You must know something about him as well as the other one who was here. Now, you tell me. Quick.
Stay away from me, you big lug. I don't know anything. Let go of me, Mom.
You heard the lady. Pittman, let go.
How do you know my name?
I read tea leaves. And while we're all asking questions, do you mind telling me why you were throwing bullets at the chinaware on Mrs. Rawlins?
I did no such thing. I don't even know Mrs. Rawlins.
You're a liar, and it's dull as the sauerkraut. The gun in your pocket will prove it.
I have no gun in my pocket. Here, look for yourself.
All right, I will. But if it's all the same to you, I'll start with your briefcase.
Well, give me that.
Why, so you can get to the gun first?
No, because I... All right, Mr. Smart Man. Go ahead and look. See for yourself that there's absolutely nothing there that concerns you.
When I get my hands on you,
stand
I'll break
still,
in two.
Marlowe. And don't look so astonished, friend. It's called a gun.
Why, you little...
Skip it, Marlowe. This isn't my idea of returning a favor, but it is good business. You see, baby, little Angie sells out to the highest bidder. And no matter how I add things up, that isn't you.
So exit Pittman, huh? Briefcase and...
What are you staring at?
That little gadget there. Must have fallen out of Pittman's briefcase.
What is it?
Twin brother of an item I found a little while ago, rubber pants included.
What are you talking about, Marlowe?
Nothing, baby. Just tell me how long I sit here.
As long as you like. Now, you see, Marlowe, I just can't afford to let you get to Pittman ahead of me.
Yeah. That good business you were talking about.
Uh-huh. After all, a gal's got to make a living. One way or another, Marlowe. Doesn't she?
There was room to debate Angie's point, but no time. So I skipped her invitation for a drink. Both promised and threatened to see her again and headed for my car in the only direction left, the residence of the local pivot man, Mr. Arthur Slater. When I got to within a block of the place, I parked and then approached slowly, keeping to the shadows all the way. But the house turned out to be as dark and quiet as the inside of a coffin. I was about to leave when some noise a dozen yards behind me said that I was no longer alone. I turned quietly and got ready for what I figured would be a reunion with my old buddy, Walter Pittman. But I was wrong. Sneaking through a nearby clump of orange trees with all the deftness of an ox with bunion trouble was no one else but my client, Ben Rawlins. When I called his name out loud, he ran toward me, arms and legs flailing the wind like a Kansas scarecrow caught in a tornado.
Marlowe, I've been looking all over for you.
Rawlins, why aren't you back in my apartment where you're supposed to be?
I couldn't wait any longer. I was afraid something had happened to you. When you didn't call, I was sure of it. I thought you might be here at Slater's.
But I did call, and all I got was a busy signal.
Oh, about an hour ago. Why, that was a friend of yours. He wanted to know if you'd play cards with him tonight. How do you believe me?
Now, for the time being, yes. Incidentally, Rawlins, do these mean anything to you, these oversized bobby pins?
Good Lord, the curlers. Where did you get those curlers, Marlowe? They should be in my safe.
Well, I found one at your house and the other in a briefcase that belonged to Walter Pittman.
But Marlowe, these are samples of my newest invention, these hair curlers. They can produce a home permanent wave overnight that will last for 6 months. It's worth millions to me.
If you live.
Yes. Now, it should be easy to figure out who wanted to kill me.
I'm not so sure. If you didn't even know these were missing... Why should someone have to kill you to get hold of them?
And second of all, how come the shooting's still going on?
What shooting are you talking about?
Over at your place. Somebody tried to kill your wife there just before I called
what?
You. And that brings us right back to your alibi about talking to Ibarra at the time. It's a little too pat, Rawlins. Besides, that curler could very easily have dropped out of your pocket.
But why should I shoot at Lucille?
For the best reason in the book, she wanted to kill her. And when that yacht business almost boomeranged on you, you still hadn't changed your mind. And that led to this whole routine with me double-billed as Patsy and star witness both.
Well, you're out of your mind, Marlowe. I couldn't have set that explosion on the yacht as a trap for Lucille.
Why not?
Because it was on account of me that Lucille wasn't on the yacht herself that night.
What?
After we argued, we decided not to spend any more time under the same roof. Lucille said that suited her fine and she'd sleep on the yacht. We let it go at that till about noon on Friday.
And you got small about things and said the yacht was yours, maybe? That you'd sleep on it?
Yes. I was just bickering.
Just a minute, Rawlins. I've heard enough, and I think I finally understand this whole screwy deal. I'll know for sure just as soon as I can make one single phone call to your house. We'll get back to Slater. Come on. When I got to a telephone and threw to the maid at the Rawlins place, I was almost positive that in another minute I'd have both a solid answer for my client and a couple of clumsy customers for the law. When the shaky voice at the other end of the tube told me that Lucille had just left the house in high gear, after mumbling something about a place called Inspiration Point, I stopped being confident and started to worry. And when I tossed the jackpot question at the maid and got the winning answer, that worry became something worse, and it must have showed.
What is it, Marlowe? What did you find out?
Too much to explain now. Where's Inspiration Point, Ron?
About a mile south of here,
mm-hmm.
Straight along the shore.
Good. What kind of a car does your wife drive?
A Blue Nash. What's Inspiration Point got to do with Lucille, Marlowe?
Everything. Now, look. You call the cops and tell them to get out there as fast as they can. Do you get me? As fast as they can. Inspiration Point turned out to be an acre of windswept rock that overlooked the cold January sea. And after I saw Lucille's empty car, I crept, staggered, and fell down the narrow, winding trail that led from the road to the promontory itself. I was afraid that I was going to be too late to stop what I was sure was a hastily scheduled murder. But a minute later, when I rounded the last crazy turn in the trail, I felt better. Because standing only a couple of yards away from me, her hair slapping wildly against the upturned collar of her coat, and very much alive, was Lucille Rawlins. I was about to breathe a sigh of relief when suddenly I caught the expression in her eyes. I turned to follow the line of her unblinking gaze, and I knew that I hadn't arrived any too soon, because the lady was being held at the point of a gun held by Arthur Slater. I closed my hand tight around the Colt 38 in my pocket and moved closer.
When you called me at the house, you said that my husband was alive and with you. Why did you lie to me?
Because I knew that would bring you running, and I had to be alone with you, Lucille, so I could do what I missed doing last time.
Last time? You mean the yacht? You did that?
Yes. But somehow or other, Ben was out there instead of you. So that accident was a waste of time. But this one, the bereaved wife who jumped or fell to her death from the edge of Inspiration Point, won't be.
But why, Slater? Why do you want to kill me?
There's no time to explain, Lucille.
And we'll take time, Slater.
Marlowe, you!
Yeah, me!
Marlowe! Marlowe, he's going to kill me!
Yes, honey, I know. He had to.
But why, Marlowe? Why?
Because he stole your husband's invention to sell the wall of Pittman. He was going to go into business with him. But now when the cops get here, he's going first to a hospital and then to jail. A grand larceny and attempted murder.
Attempted murder? What about Ben, Marlowe?
Ben was a near miss, honey, nothing more. You'll see what I mean in a minute. When Lucille found out that Ben was still alive, there were a lot of tears and promises to be good from both parties. And it wasn't until an hour had gone by and the police had already booked both Slater and Pittman, who was picked up heading back for L.A., that Mr. and Mrs. Rawlins were in the condition to sit down and talk things over, even with the help of coffee and cigarettes in the Rawlins home.
Then the whole scheme, Marla, was designed by Slater, who, as my business manager, had access to the new curlers.
That's right. Knowing how Walter Pittman felt about you, Slater secretly contacted him to handle the manufacturing end, you see?
Yes, I see.
Well, a few changes in the design, and the whole thing would have been patented and on the market while you and Slater...
Who pretended that Pittman was a stranger to him.
Uh-huh. Was still laboring away at last-minute changes.
And when we learned about Pittman's product, Slater would act as surprised as Ben here.
You're so right, Lucille. That was the plan. Oh, but it fell apart. See, it fell apart when you accidentally ran into Slater in that small bar in downtown L.A., do you remember?
Yes.
When he was with Pittman, the man you described to me as the stranger?
Yes, of course.
All right. Well, he realized then that with Pittman's product a success, you would sooner or later see a picture of Pittman, the newly rich inventor, and recognize him as the man you saw with Slater before Pittman's product was on the market.
So that meant that Slater either had to get rid of Lucy or give up his entire plan.
Mm-hmm.
Have you got a match, Mr. Mump? No? No, I'm going to give them up. But Marlowe, was Pittman involved in the murder attempt, too?
Oh, no, no. He drew the line at the theft. See, when he found out that you had died mysteriously, he turned up here to check on Slater because he couldn't afford to be mixed up in your murder.
I see. But how did you figure all this, Marlowe?
Well, after I had tangled with everybody, I was no place. Angie Gordon was looking for an angle. You, Lucille, were getting shot at,
poor darling.
Yeah, and Pittman and Slater were not on the same team. At least as far as the business on the yacht was concerned. Nobody seemed to have a clear-cut motive.
But when I told you that Lucille herself was supposed to stay on the yacht that night, you had the answer.
That was the time. After I called your house and asked the maid the jackpot question, which was, who aside from you, Ben, knew that Lucille was going to sleep on the yacht Friday night?
And she said Slater, didn't she?
Yeah. Said something else, too. She also said that you had left for Inspiration Point in a big hurry.
Yes. Then Slater tried to kill me first on the yacht, second in the house here, and finally out on the point.
Mm-hmm. But in the end, it worked out fine, darling. Because the third time was the charm. For us. Well, by the time I was through tying in all the loose ends for my client and his wife, it was 3 o'clock in the morning, and I was dog-tired all over again. When I got into my car and started away from the place, Ben and Lucille were standing in the doorway waving at me and smiling. So as I drove back toward L.A., I forgot about the sleep I was missing and thought about them. A couple who couldn't get along until one or the other of them had been robbed, dynamited, and shot at. Yeah, I guess it's really so. As the old bromide has it, the path of true love never does run smooth. Smoothly. It's smooth. Oh, well.
The Adventures of Philip Marlowe, created by Raymond Chandler, stars Gerald Moore and is produced and directed by Norman McDonald. Script is by Mel Donnelly, Robert Mitchell, and Gene Levitt. Featured in the cast were Lorette Philbrant, Edgar Berrier, Virginia Gregg, John Daner, and Jack Moyles. The special music was by Richard Arant. Be sure and be with us again next week when Philip Marlowe says...
Somewhere in the cold, persistent rain that made the city itself seem a thing of evil, a girl had disappeared, and it was my job to find her. But before I did, I found death and a devil.
The Jack Benny Shows on CBS Sundays at 7 Eastern Standard Time, and comes right in the middle of 90 minutes of wonderful comedy on CBS's new early Sunday evening lineup. Immediately preceding Jack's show, you'll find Spike Jones and a Spotlight Review at 6:30 Eastern Time. And following the Benny Show, Amos and Andy take over with their inspired humor. Listen to Spike Jones and Amos and Andy over most of these same CBS stations tomorrow, flanking Jack Benny. They add up to 90 solid minutes of merry Sunday listening on CBS. Now, stay tuned for Gangbusters, which follows immediately over most of these stations. This is Roy Rowan speaking for CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System. Jack Powell as Richard Diamond, private detective.
Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, I like to say that. Hello there, this is Diamond. I don't know why. Maybe it's just because I say it all the time. Hello there, this is Diamond. You know, I think it sounds kind of, well, pretty bad. Of course, I'd rather say, hello there, this is I've got a sponsor, Diamond, but that's silly, too, because if I had a sponsor, I wouldn't have time to say, hello there, this is Diamond. I'd be overshining your shoes. Confused? Well, so am I. Want to get really mixed up? Let me tell you what happened last week. This is real silly. So silly, it wound up with murder. I was sitting in my office thinking about June Allison when the phone rang. Diamond Detective Agency, no other corpse can make that statement.
Oh, Rick.
Don't believe it? Just listen to what one of our satisfied customers has to say about Diamond. I've been buried now on 30 years.
Rick.
Hello, Helen.
You idiot. What are you doing?
I know this will throw you. Nothing.
No washing today?
Finished an hour ago. Oh, by the way, I got a beef.
A beef?
Yeah, those socks you knitted for me shrunk so much I need four more pair.
Well, if they shrunk, what do you want with four more pair?
Going to start a new fad. Going to wear them on my toes, you know, toe socks.
Well, if I knit you four pair, that'll only give you 10 altogether.
By George, you really pulled off a speedy, didn't you?
Well, howdy. Wasn't half as bad as some of those gas plays you come up with.
All right, Smarty, now, what's on your rural mind?
Want you to do me a favor?
Like, for instance?
No, for instance. I told you a friend of mine would come up and see you, and I want you to do what you can for him.
Mr. Diamond?
Hold it a minute, honey. Yeah?
Mr. Diamond, I was told to look you up. I am Renee.
Rick, what is it?
Helen.
Yeah, what's the matter?
Something just tiptoed into my office. I got a hunch you know about it.
Oh, maybe that's Renee.
That's what it says.
If you are, Mr. Diamond, I wish you'd please pay a little attention to me, or aren't you interested in a potential client?
Hold it a second, honey. Sure, I'm always interested in a potential client. What did you do, lose your wedges?
I beg your pardon?
Forget it. I've got Miss Asher on the phone now. She just told me you were coming up.
Oh, well, please say hello to Miss Asher. She's such a darling.
Yeah. Honey, Renee says to say hello. Says you're a darling.
Oh, well, say hello to Renee. He makes my hats for me.
I'll get the story from him. Call you later. Now, Mr. Renee...
The full name is Benet. Renee Benet. How do you do?
How are you, Mr. Benet?
Mr. Diamond, I have a problem, and Miss Asher seemed to think that you could help me with it.
Well, depends. Cigarette?
No, thanks. I never use them. Depends on what? You don't even know my problem yet.
Look, I don't care if you swipe John Frederick's toupee. For $100 a day in expenses, I'll grow a mattress on his skull.
Mr. Diamond, I can see that you don't know much about hats.
You are so wrong.
Oh, am I? Well, it may interest you to know that John Fredericks are two people, Mr. John and Mr. Fredericks.
Look, Mr. Benet, I don't care if they're patrol number 3 of the Brownies. Can you afford $100 a day in expenses?
Mr. Diamond, I am the new sensation in hats.
You must look lovely. Okay, Mr. Benet, I take it you can afford me. Now, what's your problem?
I want you to prevent the theft of my 3 latest creations.
Hats?
Creations, Mr. Diamond.
Okay, creations. Why do you want them protected?
Why, because someone is going to steal them before my fall showing.
How do you know that?
Because on similar occasions, the same thing has happened. Twice, to be exact. The designs were stolen, and 2 weeks later, that lowlife Georges Marchand had his showing, and my hats were the high point of his show.
What did you do?
What could I do? I couldn't prove it. If I attempted to expose him, he would have said that I was lying. Everybody knows how much we hate each other. I'd have been a laughingstock.
Do you think he had the hats stolen?
I'm sure of it. And I'm also sure that someone in my salon is responsible for the actual theft.
You know definitely?
No. No, but I suspect my partner, Gerald Winters. He's always been jealous of my ability. Oh, Mr. Diamond, couldn't you open a window or something? It's frightfully hot.
Oh, it's the air conditioning. I keep a bag of red-lip jumbos up in the vent. Sometimes they get stuck.
Red-lip jumbos?
Pistachio nuts. You like hats? I get hung up on pistachio nuts.
Perhaps you should see a psychiatrist.
I did.
What happened?
I sent him 5 pounds of pistachios just yesterday.
Oh. Oh, well, here's my card. I'll see you at my salon, Mr. Diamond, in about an hour. Oh, and something else. I don't want my partner or the help to know that you're a private detective.
What am I supposed to do, buy a hat?
Well, I'll tell them that you're a designer from Hollywood. That way, whatever you say will be all right. See you in an hour.
You say this Richard of Hollywood is coming here to look at our new line?
That's correct, Lillian.
Never heard of him.
Well, that's not so surprising, Gerald. There are a lot of people I'm sure you've never heard of, especially the more famous ones.
I don't like that.
Oh, don't you? Well, I'm overjoyed that you're sure of one thing, at least.
Now, don't you two start fighting again. I've never heard of this Richard of Hollywood either.
Well, he's a new man, works for the studios. He's made quite a sensation the last year or so.
Well, I'm sick and tired of temperamental artists. I'm going back to my office.
Well, why don't you do that, Gerald? Keep the books in the black, dear Potter, while I work to pay for your salary.
You know, Rennie, someday I'm going to strangle you with one of your own hats.
Why don't you buy yourself a barbell instead? Then the next time you get into a bathing suit, there'll be no doubt that you have muscles. Office boy.
How can you two continue like this? It's frightful.
Lillian, my love, I would rather join forces with a cobra than to keep on with Gerald. But he has an iron-bound contract that assures him of at least $50,000 a year. I'm helpless. Yes, come in. Oh, Richard, come in, come in.
Thanks. You better go out and pour some water on your partner. I just ran into him.
Gerald, what do you mean?
Well, I was looking for you, and he came up and introduced himself.
You told him your name?
Told him I was a hat designer from Hollywood, so he pointed out your office and said something about my lily white hands.
And what happened?
I didn't like the remark, so I shoved one of them down his throat.
Oh, wonderful. This I'll have to see.
I put a feather in his mouth. He can't miss him.
Renee, don't you think...
Oh, I'm sorry. Stupid of me. Lillian, this is Richard of Hollywood.
What? Oh, yeah.
Is something wrong?
Oh, no. How do you do?
This is Lillian Richmond, my junior designer and chief model. Now, you two think of something clever to talk about. I want to see Gerald, bloody nose, feather and all.
Cigarette? You look nervous.
No, thanks.
So, Gerald was the victim of a collision?
Yes.
Do your friends call you Richard?
Well, it depends on how friendly they get. Then sometimes they come up with some real hair curlers. What do your friends call you?
I prefer Lillian, but sometimes they call me Lil.
Now, Lil sounds more interesting.
That's when they call me Lil, when things get interesting. You don't act much like a hat designer, Richard. More like you should be playing football.
Oh, well, I started by designing helmets for Notre Dame.
I understand you work for the movies. You with any particular studio?
No. I'm with an independent company. Real Square Productions. We make training films.
Training films?
Oh, that was simply wonderful. I had to pour a vase of water on him. Several customers were so frightened they left, but it was worth it. And how are you two getting along?
Richard was just talking about football. He was explaining the merits of a short pass.
Oh. Well, if you don't mind, Lillian, Mr. Richard and I have some business to talk over.
Not at all. Get him to tell you how he started by making helmets. Maybe you'll get some new ideas, Renee.
Helmets? Oh, my goodness.
See you later, Richard.
I'll wear my muzzle.
Isn't she lovely? She has about as much conscience as a tiger in a chicken coop.
Okay, now what about our business?
Oh, of course. Now, here's a retainer. I trust that $500 is enough to start on.
My landlord will think so. What do I do?
Well, I've told everyone that you're going to be with us until the fall showing. You want to see how I work. Perhaps take some designs back to Hollywood with you. Now, all you really have to do is to get to know the people that work for me. Now, be here from 9 in the morning to 6 at night and keep those designs from being stolen.
Oh, by the way, where are the designs?
They're in my safe here. Tomorrow they go to the designing rooms, and that's when the situation becomes acute. We'll have nothing to worry about until tomorrow, so I'll see you tomorrow in the morning at 9, Mr. Diamond.
Okay. In case you need me, here's my card. I'll write my home number on it. For some reason, when I get a client, they always run into silly little things like murder or something. You just might need me. See you in the morning. I left Renee and headed for my apartment. I had suddenly found myself in the horrible position of a man with a steady job. 9 in the morning until 6 in the evening. Now, I'm a guy who can get along without too much sleep, especially when the situation calls for it. Like the little blonde dancer that works over on 52nd Street. There was a situation. But this time, I figured a good night's rest wouldn't do me any harm, so when I got home, I fixed a bite to eat, took a hot shower, and climbed into my little old sack. Okay.
Diamond?
Oh, hello, honey.
Now you stop that. Wake up.
What? Oh, no. Who is it?
It's Lieutenant Levinson.
A bully for you. What time is it?
It's 4:30 in the morning.
Goodbye, Walt.
Now, you wait a minute. I'm just trying to make things easy on you. And what was that hello, honey, for?
Oh, I was dreaming. What do you mean, make things easy for me? At 4:30 in the morning, nothing's easy.
I wanted to let you get here under your own steam. I know what a shock it'd be if I sent Otis down there to drag you out of bed.
Oh, yeah. Horrible. I'd only had ate the fire that Dracula was loose again. Hey, what do you want me there for?
Well, I know you won't be surprised, but there's been a literal killing.
So what?
So you're mixed up in it. Now get down here.
Now, wait a minute. Who's dead?
A guy named Benet. Auto accident.
Rene Benet?
Yeah, I guess that's the way you pronounce it. You see, Otis, you mallet head, you were wrong. It's pronounced Benet, not Benny. That idiot was calling him Rene Benny.
Walt, how did you know I was working for Benet?
Your card was found in his pocket. I'm at 125th Street, so come on up as fast as you can.
As soon as I get my football helmet off.
Football helmet? You sleep in a football helmet?
Well, I do. Don't you? Bye. I left the apartment and took off the address Walt had given me. It was way uptown on Riverside Drive. It was cold and the fog had begun to drift in. I found Walt over near the prowl car and he briefed me. Rene Benet had been killed in an automobile accident. His car had crashed over a 100-foot viaduct.
He went through the guardrail up there, Rick.
Oh, wonder what he was doing way up here. Certainly wasn't headed home.
Maybe he was going to see someone.
Oh, maybe. Better check and see if he knew anyone out this way.
Now, you wait a minute. You think something's wrong?
Could be, huh? He had a partner who might want him out of the way. Oh, it's a mess, isn't it?
Yeah, pretty badly burned before the fire boys got here. Wait a minute. Otis is over there with him. Otis!
Probably warming his feet.
He couldn't warm those big things on an atom bomb. Otis!
Yeah, Lieutenant?
Yeah, Lieutenant. Did you find anything?
Yeah, there's been a fire.
Oh. Get over here.
Walt, what about that card you found in his pocket? Why didn't it get burned?
It was in one of his suits over at his apartment. I put in a call, checked his license plate, found out who he was, where he lived, and sent a couple of boys over. They came up with your card. You know how they all love you.
Anything else in the apartment?
Nothing yet. We'll get a report.
Here I am, Lieutenant.
He's getting smart.
Oh, hello, Shamus.
Otis, get the car started. We'll go back to the station and wait for a report about this accident.
Yeah. The Lieutenant...
No!
No?
That's right. You touch that siren and I'll throw you out of the car.
Oh, guy can't have any fun anymore.
When are you going to get that report? It's 6:30 in the morning.
I know it's 6:30. I always yawn like this when it's 6:30.
Oh, maybe this is it. Yeah?
I got that report, Lieutenant.
Take the marbles out of your mouth. What did you say?
Oh, yeah, sorry. I'm a little sleepy.
Maybe you'd like me to sing you a lullaby.
Oh, that'd be silly.
Well, then make sense.
I got that report. Benet. Okay. He died from the fire. Autopsy showed he had a slight concussion, but not serious enough to kill him.
What about the car?
It wasn't tampered with. There was something funny, though. A steering wheel was smeared like someone had been wearing gloves. No prints. Benny didn't have on any gloves.
How'd the fire start?
Cigarette in the upholstery.
Cigarette in the upholstery. Okay, Otis, I'll call you if I need you. Go on back to sleep. Did you hear?
Yeah. Benet was murdered.
What makes you so sure?
Walt... Otis said he had a slight concussion, but not enough to kill him, right?
Okay.
You're going to tell me that he was unconscious the whole time it took that fire to start? Ordinarily, a cigarette smolders a long time.
Then why didn't he get out of the car?
Because he didn't have time to wake up. Someone helped that fire along, got it burning in a few minutes, and then pushed the car over the viaduct.
Ah, that isn't enough.
Okay, how's this then? Benet didn't smoke.
Now, that I'll buy. But how do you know?
He told me. I offered him a cigarette in my office this morning.
Well, who do you think did it?
Well, I know he had two enemies. His partner, Gerald Winters, and another hat designer, George Marchand.
I'll have them picked up.
No. Let them alone for a while.
Huh?
Let's have some breakfast first, and then go down to Renee's salon when it opens.
¶¶
quite a store.
Yes? Oh, good morning. How's Richard from Hollywood?
From hunger. Richard from Hollywood? All right, Paul.
Oh, I wish Otis was here. He'd love this.
Well, whose side are you on? Now, Walt, this is Lil. Lillian Richmond, Walt. Lillian, this is Lieutenant Levinson.
Lieutenant?
Homicide.
Oh, well, I hope he's just in to buy a hat for his wife.
I'm not married, Miss Richmond.
Well, to buy a hat.
Lillian, I just called Renee's apartment to... Oh, what do you want?
Walt, this is Gerald Winters. Who split his lip? He ran into a fist. Where were you between 3 and 4 o'clock this morning, Mr. Winters?
What do you want to know for?
Gerald, this is a lieutenant from Homicide. I think maybe something's happened.
What could have happened? I was in bed from 11 o'clock till 8. Besides, what's a policeman doing with the great Richard from Hollywood? Did someone see one of his creations and strangle to death?
Where were you around 4 this morning, Lillian?
Also in bed, but I can't prove it. Why?
Bernay's been killed.
What?
You don't seem too upset, Mr. Winters.
No? Well, you're right. As a matter of fact, I'm not.
How did it happen?
Car went over the viaduct, burned to death.
Well, then why ask us where we were? It was an accident, wasn't it?
No, it was not an accident. Mr. Winters, what happens to you now? You take over the firm?
Well, yes. It all goes to me.
I think you'd better come down to the station. Answer a few questions.
Oh, no, you don't... Well, this is absurd. I hated Rene, but I'd never kill him.
Rick, do me a favor and go over to this George Marchand. Talk to him until I can send Otis down to pick him up.
You aren't a hat designer, are you?
Bingo. You win another split lip.
No.
Lay off him, Rick. Come on, Mr. Winters. Let's go.
I knew he wasn't. I just knew that man couldn't be famous in Hollywood or anywhere else.
Well?
Mm-hmm.
Police?
Private detective. The name's Diamond.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever play football?
Yeah.
Stop back after you see Marchand. I'd like to find out more about the game.
Strong line and a good backfield. You've played it.
Good morning. What can I do for you?
George Marchand?
Yes.
Well, I'm from the police, Mr. Marchand.
The police?
Your competitor, René Benet, was killed last night.
What?
He was burned to death in his car.
Oh, but this is horrible. But what has René's death to do with me?
Well, we think he was murdered, and we're trying to find a good motive.
Mr. Diamond, it's true that René and I were enemies. Everyone knew it, but to think that I would take his life is utterly absurd.
Yeah. Where were you about 4 this morning, Mr. Marchand?
Well, I was in bed, asleep.
Everybody sure had a dull evening. How well do you know Gerald Winters, Renee's partner?
Oh, just slightly.
How about Lillian Richmond?
By reputation only.
One more question. When's your fall showing, Mr. Marchand?
In 2 days.
Well, be sure to be around for it. The police get very unhappy if a murder suspect catches the first plane for the border.
Murder suspect?
See you later, Mr. Marchand. I left Marchand counting his pulse and wondering just how much I did know. And if he could have seen what was going on in my little old mind, he might have grown a few white hairs. I grabbed a cab and headed for the 5th Precinct Police Station and Walt Levinson. Needless to say, he was not happy.
Oh, now you wait a minute, Diamond. I'm satisfied with Gerald Winters. He's the only one who had a motive.
The only one who had a motive that you can see. Too many things point to someone else.
Give me a for instance.
Oh, you always want a for instance.
Well, hang it, you're trying to convince me that Winters isn't the killer, aren't you?
Yes, I am, Walt.
Then I want a for instance. I want to know your reason.
Well, Winters and Renee hated each other. Even as partners, they really wanted each other out of the way.
Are you crazy? You just gave me the best reason for hanging on to Winters.
Walt, when Renee was killed, he was 10 miles away from his apartment going in the other direction.
So what?
Did you find out if he knew anyone who might live out that way?
Even if he didn't know anyone out that way, I still say so what? The killer went for a drive with him, got out there, hit him over the head, poured gasoline on the seat, and dropped a cigarette. Pushed him off the viaduct. And Winter smokes. I know. I sent a whole carton down to his cell to make sure.
You're right about how the killer did it. But do you think Renee would have taken a drive like that with a man he hated, knowing how much a man hated him? Huh? And another thing. It was pretty warm yesterday and last night, wasn't it?
Certainly was. Lousy weather.
Okay. The killer wore gloves. Isn't that a little strange on a warm night?
So he slipped on some gloves. Didn't want to leave any fingerprints.
No. The killer was driving. The report said there were absolutely no fingerprints on the steering wheel. If Rene was in the driver's seat, there would have been a few of his anyway.
We couldn't tell whether he was in the driver's seat. He could have been thrown aside when the car crashed. But I don't get this glove angle.
You want to catch a killer?
Now, What kind of a remark is that?
Well, come on.
Oh, where are we going?
Down to Rene's shop. We can get in through a window I noticed in the alley. There are some designs in his safe, and Walt, the killer has to get them out tonight.
There you are, Lieutenant. It's Jimmy.
Rick, I don't like this, busting into a place without a warrant.
Oh, go on. Climb in and watch out for the burglar alarm.
All right. Come on, Otis.
Okay.
Here, I'll give you a hand, Diamond.
Well, that ought to be easy for you, Otis.
Yeah, why?
Well, you could hold on with the other four and still have one left over to grab me.
Oh, is that so?
You two lay off. Come on, Rick. Show me where to go.
Right over here. In Renee's office.
What makes you think the killer hasn't already stolen the plans?
I wouldn't have done it the night of the murder. That would have shown a motive. Wouldn't have done it today. Too many people in the shop. Go on in.
Gee. Spooky. I can't see a thing.
Walt, what's this?
Boo. Ah, for Pete's sake, Sharp.
Lay off, Otis Diamond. And where do we hide?
Just sit on anywhere and be quiet. The first person through that door is our killer.
Clock is going to drive me crazy.
You want me to shut it off?
How do you shut off a clock, stupid?
Busted.
Oh. Rick.
Yeah?
I still don't understand why that glove angle is so important.
Well, as a single item, it's not so important. But along with the rest, it was the first thing that gave me an idea of the killer.
Lieutenant.
Yeah?
I think I got it. I did.
Oh. Rick, it's 3 o'clock. I don't think your killer's going to show.
Yeah, I'm getting stiff.
Hold it, Walt. I think we have a customer.
Otis, get up and stand next to that light switch. Flip it on when I tell you.
Yeah, right.
Okay, Otis.
Oh, hello, Lillian.
Oh, well, you startled me. What's this all about? What are you doing here?
Waiting for you.
For me? I don't understand. I was just coming over to pick up some of my sketches. I forgot them this afternoon.
So you waited until 3 a.m?
I had a date.
Yeah. Otis, go out and drag in her date.
Now, you wait just a minute. I don't know what this is all about, but
go
you
ahead,
know
Otis.
Right to...
You're right.
Mr. Diamond, would you mind telling me what this is all about?
Sure, Lover. Point by point, it goes something like this. Rene Benet was killed by somebody new and trusted. He never would have gone for that riot otherwise. Benet didn't smoke, so the killer was an amateur and started the fire with a cigarette. The killer wore gloves, and it was too hot that night for a man to wear them without looking suspicious.
Are you saying that you think
that
I...
That you killed Benet? Sure you did.
Come on, you get in there.
You take your dirty hands off of me.
Here he is, Lieutenant. This is the guy in the car.
Lil, what is this all about?
You better ask Mr. Diamond, although I don't think he'll make much sense. He just accused me of killing Rene.
What?
Good morning, Mr. Marjon. I thought you didn't know, Lillian.
Well, prior to this evening, I did not. I called her because I wanted to talk to her about Renee's death.
Ah, you're lying. Today at your shop, you call me Mr. Diamond. How did you know my name?
Well, you told it to me.
No. You're fibbing again. I just said I was from the police. Only one person who knew both of us could have called you, and she also knew I was on the way over to your shop. Didn't you, Lil?
The name is Miss Richmond. Now prove that I killed Rene. You've got no motive.
Well, the designs are enough to start with. You probably suspected I wasn't a hat designer. And you knew you had to work fast if you were going to get those designs to Marchand here before this fall showing.
That's not true. Lillian never gave me any designs from Rene.
You know, of course, Mr. Marchand, that if we stick your girlfriend with a murder rap, you're an accessory before and after the fact.
What?
Sure, maybe you'll get to sit in a nice electric glove seat and hold hands.
Oh, but I had nothing to do with the murder.
Well, you knew about it, and you knew who did it. That's enough to put you away for 20 years. Being mixed up in the actual motive might get you life.
No. She was the one that did it. She knew Winters would be blamed for it.
George!
Yes, she stole the designs for me because she wanted to ruin Benet and take over his salon, but I did not know she was going to kill him.
Why, you
dirty little man. You did know it. You did know it. You helped me plan it if I got the best sketches for you. I'll tear your eyes out.
Get her away from me.
Come on, lady. Let's go.
Okay, haul them both out of the car. Rick, I don't know how. Rick. Oh, no. Rick! Oh, why does he always disappear like that?
Rick, what's that you're playing?
It's a new thing, kind of pretty. Don't cry, Joe.
Well, sing it.
All right, but you know that gripey neighbor in the other apartment building.
Oh, don't pay any attention to him. You don't hear any of the other tenants yelling for you to shut up.
Well, maybe they're not as forceful as the grouch. You see, honey, I got a couple of letters.
Letters?
Mm-hmm, from the people in that building. Most of them like the singing, but a couple feel the same way the grouch does.
Well, there's only one way to find out what all the people in the building think.
How's that?
Open the window and sing so they can all hear you.
Okay, I'll buy it. You open the window. Don't you think maybe this is silly?
Rick, I like you to sing when you come over here, but I don't want you to do it if no one else does. Now, go ahead.
Okay. Don't cry, Joe. Let her go, let her go, let her go. Don't cry, Joe. Let her go, let her go, let her go. You've got to realize this is the wind-up. You'll feel much better once you make your mind up. Don't cry, Joe. Let her go. Let her go. Let her go.
No reaction yet. Maybe they all took poison.
Well, give them time. We'll find out soon enough.
I guess so.
Come on, let's go to the kitchen and case the icebox.
You have just heard Richard Diamond, Private Detective, starring Dick Powell. Helen was played by Virginia Gregg, Lieutenant Levinson by Ed Begley. Also in our cast were Wilms Herbert, Hi Averback, Kay Brinker, Clark Gordon, and Jay Novello. Music was under the direction of Frank Worth. Richard Diamond is written by Blake Edwards and directed by Richard Sandville. Dick Powell soon will be seen in the screen version of the best-selling novel, Mrs. Mike. Now, this is Eddie King inviting you to be with us again at the same time next week, when we will again bring you Dick Powell as Richard Diamond, Private Detective. Saturday night brings you some of the week's best radio entertainment when you tune for the stars on NBC. Stay tuned to NBC every Saturday evening for a great lineup of programs, including Hollywood Star Theater, Ralph Edwards' Truth or Consequences, Your Hit Parade, A Day in the Life of Dennis Day, The Judy Canova Show, and Grand Ole Opry. All the best on NBC. Stay tuned for Irene Dunne and Hollywood Star Theater on NBC.
That's it for Case Closed. If you want to find more from Richard Diamond, Philip Marlowe, past episodes of this show, and thousands of others, just visit RelicRadio.com. Find all the other podcasts there, too, and our Shoutcast stream. And if you'd like to help support it all, help keep it coming every week, give that donate button a click. Your support is how all of this is made possible. My thanks, as always, to those who have helped out. Thanks for joining me today. Be back next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed.